From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack.
Down in Mississippi, way down.
Our connection this hour will be made tomorrow when the sounds of the Jazz Festival once again flood the streets and different venues in Rochester. The 16th annual Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival will feature more than 325 concerts this year. And if you want to continue to talk numbers, here's one for you, 200,000. That's how many people the event usually attracts, and with such a strong international reputation, it's not surprising. This year's headliners include Mavis Staples, who you're hearing right now. We'll also see Joss Stone, Sheryl Crow, and more. But there are also hundreds of other exciting acts, many of them local, and maybe you haven't heard of them. And as a wise man once said, it's not who you know, but who you don't know. And that wise man is John Nugent, and he's back in here in the studio with us. He's the co-producer and artistic director of the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Welcome back, John.
Thanks. Nice to be here, Megan.
I can't believe it's been a year since you were here.
Time goes fast.
It does.
It does.
Also in studio is pianist Laura Dubin, who will be performing at the Jazz Fest for the second time. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us on the phone a little later in the hour, we'll have another musician with Rochester roots, and we'll talk more about him upcoming in our second half hour. But John, it's the 16th year of the festival this year. I'm sure you're doing dozens of interviews. You've been on the show a number of times previewing the event. How do you keep the spark going? What are you most excited about?
Well, I'm a musician first and foremost, and I'm from a long legacy of musicians and business of music people. Our family in Canada had a music store since 1883, and I love music a lot, and it's what's most important to me. So, making people happy is what drives me every day. And sitting behind the desk and getting on the phone and computer and talking to promoters around the world, seeing who's up and coming, trying to keep the colors vibrant and bright, and try to bring something special. It's a different painting every year. It's how I view a major festival like this, with so many different styles, genres, concepts, interpretations on the American art form, which is what jazz is.
And I'm sure there's an art to creating a lineup and having a balanced festival. What do you consider when you're getting calls or you're calling people?
Well, I have my own lists of personal preferences and thousands of suggestions every year. And there is a methodology, a financial methodology, an artistic methodology behind running an event that's multi-genre, multi-stages, multi-days. And having produced overseas and produced tours and different events, I've traveled all over the world to many of the major jazz festivals and try to take elements of those events to make it our own, which is what a great jazz musician should do. And Laura will speak to that and our other guests about being influenced by great artists, but creating your own sound that's uniquely identified with your interpretation of America's art form. And putting a festival together is... there's a whole number of factors. I could write a book about it now. This is my, I think, 36th festival I've produced.
Wow.
And it's trying to bring something for everybody, keeping a high level of creativity, making sure that everybody who performs really has something to say. And personally, they have to be artists who I want to get up and play with.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I do it.
I know you participate in some of those.
I have not missed a jam session in 16 years. Well, this is the 16th year, but I sit at least for a tune or two every night. It's kind of the means to an end before I close my eyes and go to sleep. But it's all about the music. That's why I do this thing, and it's making people happy, and that's what it's all about.
This event has such an interesting vibe to it. And I'm thinking back to a few people that I ran into. I was out covering the event last year, with a Marantz, a recording device that we use here. And I ran into two people who meet up at the Jazz Fest every year. They don't know each other otherwise. They met at a concert, I want to say 10, 12 years ago. Really liked each other. That's the only time every year they see each other. They hang out, they go to shows, they wait in line. I'm sure that happens a lot, that you're forming these connections and meeting people who you probably otherwise would never meet.
I went and got my car inspected the other day at a garage I'd never been to. And I said, he said, "What do you do? It's a nice car you have. What do you do?" I go, I produce a jazz festival. He goes, "I met my wife at the jazz festival 3 years ago. We saw each other on Jazz Street, went for a drink, and now we're married." And I go, "That's cool." So matchmaker, no, that's not what I do, but it happens.
We can add to your title.
A lot of people do meet at the festival. It's really coming together of the community, so it's nice to see all the people in the lines waiting to get in, chatting, talking about who they've heard. The buzz goes through the crowds, and you got to go hear this guy or that girl, and it's really a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Hanging out in lawn chairs, just chatting, waiting. It's awesome. And do you start putting the festival together the day after the previous year's festival ends? I mean, how long does it take to, are you working on multiple festivals?
I'm already looking at bookings for 2019.
Wow.
Because, well, for the headliner artists, you know, it's like going tuna fishing. You know, you have to troll and try to catch the big tuna. That's the big headliner shows. And there's the element of competition with other big venues in the area. The, you know, some of the major stars are out at CMAC or out at Darien Lake or the casinos or wherever. And the agencies that represent these big stars are in Hollywood or in New York, and it's business. Mm-hmm. So you have to have headliners. But this festival for me personally is all about the artists that are unknown, because they have a lot to say. Just because they're not popular per se, they still are very high-level musicians, and probably in some cases better musicians than the headliners, because the headliners are made popular by their, not saying their music isn't great, all these artists are great, but you know, it's a difference of how a star is born, how a star is created. We saw Norah Jones here, who was nobody in 2002 and went on to sell 8 million records the following summer. So that happens, and again, I'm not a star maker. I just try to catch artists on the way up who have something special to say. And of course, you need to have the recognized artists, because, you know, jazz is not a popular music. Pop is popular. Mm-hmm. That's why they call it pop music. So it's a juggling act, but it's really fun to put it all together with the headliners, with the emerging artists, with the big free street shows, and hopefully have a nice painting when it's all done.
Well, speaking of tomorrow night, opening night, and speaking of headliners, Joss Stone will be here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what can we expect from Joss Stone tomorrow night.
She is a great soul singer who kind of burst onto the scene with a record called Soul Sessions maybe six or seven years ago. Stole the show on the Grammys with Aretha. Just one of those artists who came out of nowhere, and she's only 24 or 5 right now, I think, or maybe a little older than that. I'm not sure of her exact age, but she's really got a great show, great vibe. She's a big star in the UK. I've heard that her goal is to play at every country of the world.
I read that, yes.
And she's been in the U.S. before, but it's rare. So that show still has a few tickets remaining, but it will be sold out by that tomorrow night for sure.
Tomorrow, 8 p.m. at Kodak Hall. And where can people get tickets? Remind them.
They can get them. They can still buy them online, get them to your smartphone or print at home, or pick them up at the box office at Easton Gibbs or prior to the show in the lobby of the Eastman Theater.
Should you risk waiting until right before the show? Okay.
Pop on site right now, rochesterjazz.com.
Perfect.
Click on Joss's photo.
Awesome. Also, Mavis Staples, that's next Wednesday.
Great soul singer. I just love Mavis. And she just won the Presidential Medal of Freedom a few weeks ago, or maybe a few months ago. Still very current, even though she was famous for some hits in the 60s. She's still touring with opening for Bob Dylan. She just did a record with the Gorillaz. She's got a really great band with her, you know. So I think that could be the sleeper show of the festival.
Nice.
Hopefully. We'll see.
How are tickets for that?
Really good. Oh, yeah. There's still a few left. Sheryl Crow is sold out. King Crimson is just about sold out. There are, I mean, a couple of hundred tickets left for the headliner shows across the board. So if you're last minute and you're still not sure, you can still catch a seat, probably in the balcony, but you'll still be able to get in and hear these great artists.
And then the festival closes out with the Hooligans.
That is the fabulous band of Bruno Mars. Right. These are the musicians that tour with him. They're on all the stadium shows. They were on the Super Bowl. They, you know, really groove. They've got a great stage presence, current R&B, soul, James Brown influence type of stuff. And they're doing some original music. And John Fawcett, the keyboard player in the band, is from Rochester.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a local kid. Cool. And he's a very important person in that touring operation. So I don't know if Bruno's going to show up. I think they're off tour right now. So
hey.
You never know. James Taylor popped in the other day with Steve Gadd. You never know. Can't say for sure now, but it is his band.
You're not breaking any news.
Not breaking any news, no. Okay. I'm hoping, but you never know. It's probably doubtful, but hey, it's his band. I'd want to go hear my band.
Yeah, I'd come show up.
Sure. You never know. So that's the beauty of Jazz Fest. You never know what's going to happen.
I love that. And Danielle Ponder and the Tomorrow People are opening that show. Shout out to Danielle Ponder and her band, who we love here. How are tickets for that? Still time?
That's a free show.
Oh, that's a free show.
Don't need a ticket. That's Parcel 5, man. There's going to be 15, 20,000 people there. So look out. That's going to be a fun night right next to the DNC or over where the Midtown Plaza used to be. It's cleared out. It's going to be, it looks like the weather forecast is good for the next 15 days. So might get a little sprinkle here and there, but it looks like the last night of the festival next weekend looks pretty good. So come early, hang out, enjoy the musicians of Bruno Mars.
Awesome way to end the festival, especially with a free show. And those free shows always draw massive crowds. How many people do you usually see at the East Ave and Chestnut Street stage, would you say?
Well, that, you know, physically with the way the police talks, it's between 10,000 people, you know. I should say that, you know, in today's world, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, but we're really, really a unified team for making sure our audience is safe. The police presence will be surrounding the circumference of the festival. I know that this morning that my partner Mark and the RPD put out a joint statement about how it's just going to be a wonderfully inviting atmosphere. There's no need to be concerned about any kind of issues. It's going to be a lot of fun, a jovial crowd. You know, the perimeter of the festival is well protected, so I think it's going to be great. And we really want people to come down and enjoy Rochester in its glory, and that's what it is when it's Jazz Fest time.
Mm-hmm. So tomorrow, opening night, St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Mm.
And I was reading a piece that Jeff Spivak wrote at the DNC, and he said, "Who is Paul Janeway? He sounds like Otis Redding. He's likely tired of hearing he looks like Drew Carey, but that makes it all the more fascinating when he breaks out the James Brown stage moves."
Guy rocks. He's really tearing it up everywhere. They opened for the Stones all over the world last year. They played at Buffalo at Ralph Wilson Stadium. Soul act supreme. They're really great, and a great party act. Great way to start the Jazz Fest off with a soul act like that. But, you know, it's important to have those well-known artists, and it's also important, like, having Laura Dubin here next to us, who's an emerging pianist who's got a lot to say musically. We've got a lot of artists that are coming here from overseas, like Wilm Simcock, who's a fantastic pianist from London, the Moscow Jazz Orchestra, you know, Igor Butman, who played on the same team as Vladimir. Now, we can't get into politics because it's music has no politics as far as I'm concerned, but he's an incredible saxophone player. Another pianist that's playing, Roberta Pickett, who I knew from Brooklyn. She's a wonderful artist. Veronica Swift is going to be playing at the little theater, replacing Bill Ballister, a guitarist who took ill recently and thus wasn't able to travel over. So there's a wide breadth of creative improvised music, and I'd like to hear Laura have to say what she'd like to comment about what she's going to play tomorrow.
You're
night.
Doing my transitions for me, John.
How's
Thanks.
That?
So, Laura, it's your second year at the festival. Mm-hmm. What was it like last year? How did you, when you got the call, how did that feel?
Oh, I was just thrilled. Not only because it's just an amazing festival and an amazing opportunity to perform, but I've been attending this festival since I was a kid. I guess I was in middle school probably when it first started. And so I went every year. And so for me, as a middle school and high school student, just getting into playing jazz, it was just an amazing education for me. And so it's just really special to have an opportunity to perform at this particular festival.
Mm-hmm. I think we've got some of your music queued up there. This is okay. From last year's festival, a live performance. And we'll just talk over it.
Sure.
Give a little listen first. So much fun. So tell me about your trio.
Well, this year we'll have Kyle Vach playing bass, and my husband Antonio Guerrero will be playing drums.
And do you have anything, is there new and exciting stuff happening this year for you? Or are you guys working on new material?
Everything we're doing this year is completely new. We're not playing any music that we played at last year's festival. It's a totally different program. We've performed a couple of the tunes like in recent months at some performances, but it's basically all new music. And we have a combination of original music that I've composed, all within the last few months mostly. We have some arrangements of jazz standards, and then we have a lot of classical music as well that's become kind of a thing for us recently, as we like to play classical piano repertoire in our own kind of jazz trio way. Mm-hmm. Here's one right now. This is the Minute Waltz by Chopin.
Wow.
Now it's a different tune.
It is incredible what you do. Growing up, going to the jazz festival, did you ever say to yourself, I would love to play here someday? Or did you ever dream?
I did. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's funny because I have that app on my phone called Time Hop, which shows you every Facebook post you've ever posted on a certain day, whatever day it is. And just a few days ago, I saw that 10 years ago, I played there with Brighton High School Jazz Band. That was my last year of high school. And now 10 years later, we're playing at the festival with my own trio for the second time. So it was really funny and just like kind of surreal seeing that post a few days ago.
Wow.
But yeah, I always did. I discovered so many musicians, you know, like John was saying just now, it's not who you know, mm-hmm. it's who you don't know. I saw a lot of my favorite musicians like Oscar Peterson and Dave Brubeck were headliners a few years back. But I also discovered so many artists that I had never heard of before, and I've been following them since whatever year I saw them at the festival. So it's just been such a great experience for me musically, being able to play and also just hear so many other great performers.
Are people discovering you because they're hearing you at the festival?
I believe so. That seemed to happen last year. We had a good crowd at both shows last year, and we have generated a new kind of group of followers since then. A bunch of people signed up for my mailing list after the festival last year, and then we saw a few people after that at some other shows that came up and said, oh, we saw you at the festival last year, and they started telling their friends about it, the ones who didn't attend our show. So it's been kind of a cool way to generate a new audience in Rochester.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't known about Laura before, maybe 7 or 8 months prior to last year's festival. Fred Hirsch had mentioned her to me, so that's Fred. You know, yeah. We talk to a lot of promoters and artists that are on tour, and when I listened to Laura, I heard, yeah, she can play, man.
So thank you.
Here she is.
Yeah, here you are in studio. What's next for you? What's the big goal, the big dream?
Well, I mean, our biggest goal is just to kind of do this thing as much as possible. It's just great, you know, performing it in front of an audience that's really there to listen to the music, because that way we can perform really, our own original music. It's just a good opportunity for that, as opposed to when you're playing at, you know, a certain type of venue. It's always great to have an opportunity to perform, but if you're playing at a different kind of place where people aren't necessarily there to hear the music, you sort of have to program the music a little differently.
Ah, oh, that is so true.
Yeah.
The energy of the audience is so important.
Mm-hmm, totally.
I do comedy performances sometimes, and when you go into shows knowing that people want to laugh, mm-hmm. it is so reaffirming, and it's such a different show when you say you're performing at a place like a corporate event where they're just, we're eating our snacks and there's entertainment. Mm-hmm. How do you feed off the audience when you're on stage?
I mean, of course, it's still fun. You know, I love playing no matter what, but for example, when we play at an event like that, we're not going to be playing a lot of our original music because it's better to play kind of jazz standards at that sort of thing. But when you're playing for an audience who's there to hear you, you can play your originals. And I like to kind of tell the story of my songs because a lot of them have either a story behind them or maybe a funny title, or they might be dedicated to a musician who's influenced me. And I like to kind of mention that before we start playing because then it gives the audience kind of something to grab onto while they're listening to the whatever piece of music it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
John, how about you? How do you feed off the audience when you're in a jam session on stage?
You know, the jams late at night are always a blast because everybody's heard so much music and they're just chilling out. And for me, it's sort of the release because I'm running around putting out fires or making sure everybody has what they need. And it's typical when you have a lot of moving parts in 17 venues that are running. So the energy I get, you feel an electricity in the air kind of when the kids are playing on the high school bands on the Jazz Street stage, and people are lining up at the Kilbourne getting their wristbands and running around, and it's sunny and warm out, Java's is packed, everybody's just feeling great, and it's a good vibe, and that to me is sort of like, you know, when you start up a lawnmower, you go,
vroom. Yeah.
That's how I feel around 4:30, and then introducing every artist to Kilbourne Hall is always fun for me, and those venues are always packed every night. So it's a really great intangible electricity. You feel it, but you can't hold on to it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the essence of what a good event is all about.
I know last year when you were on the program, we talked about how during jam sessions or when you're improvising in jazz, I think Evan asked the question, you know, how does that work? How do you know where to go?
Well, when you go to a jam session, there's a language, there's a vocabulary of standards, like Laura mentioned, that people know. You know,
it's like language. I think
it
that's
is,
the
and there's chord scale analogy. Relationships, and you know, the musicians that are getting up on the stage, if they're good musicians, they know the vocabulary. And then the conversation is dictated by the soloist, who maybe, you know, the drummer may compliment him back, or the piano's player or guitar player's comping may throw a rhythm at them that stirs the conversation of the tune, depending on the what I'd call the geography of the tune, which way it's going. If it's a regular eight, what we call AABA tune with an 8-8 bridge section in the last eight, or a 12-bar blues, or an elongated form of a standard. So the vocabulary knowledge of chords and scales and rhythms and, you know, the languages that you've assimilated, just like learning to speak French, you'd want to go to France, right?
Sure.
If you're playing jazz, you'd want to go to a jazz club or school and be around musicians that are playing the same music you are, and then you learn that language, and it becomes intuition, mm-hmm. expression. And at the end of the day, you want to make music that's hopefully your own style and sound, and you're unique to that particular tune when you play on it.
Laura, do you do a lot of improvising with your trio?
Oh, yeah. That's really the, I guess, the cornerstone, if that's the right word, of what we do. I love creating my own arrangements, which is basically what we perform at our shows. That's what we'll be doing tonight. So, for example, just talking about a jazz standard, I might arrange the head, which is basically the melody of the song, in kind of a unique way, maybe not the same way that it's typically played. But then the middle part of the piece is generally open for improvisation. And that goes with, you know, my original music, too, and even the classical music as well.
So, Laura, you have one ticket to the Jazz Fest this year when you're not performing. Who are you seeing?
Oh, wow. Well, there's
no pressure.
A couple people that I'm really excited about, and the two that I'm the most excited about, well, the two shows. One is it's four pianists playing together, and I want to make sure I get all the names right. I know you've got it on the poster right there.
Yeah, John's got a huge
Kenny
poster.
Barron, Benny Green, Cyrus Chestnut, and George Cables.
Perfect. So many great pianists that I couldn't even remember who they all were. But and then Monty Alexander is another one that I'm very excited about. Mm-hmm. We do have the Cub passes, so we plan on seeing as many shows as possible after our show's over.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the club passes. If someone's new to the Jazz Fest,
Yeah. They're
not quite sure how that works, tell us
it's
how that
works.
It's
a value ticket, okay? Mm-hmm. So you don't have to have a club pass to go to any club pass series show. There are no reserved seats in any of the pass venues. There is first come, first serve seating. You can pay at the door for a one-time entry, or you can use your pass and go to as many concerts as you can physically get to over the 9 days. So, you know, if you're going to go to more than 9 sets of music, buy the pass,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, or even less than that, 8 sets of music. The pass right now is $210. It's $30 at the door. Some people go to 40 or 50 concerts over the 9 days. They take the whole week and they just go from venue to venue to venue. Start at 4, end at 11, and they're just running. I see herds of people going from venue, and it's fabulous. It's so much fun for them. And they get to vacuum up all different styles of music. Hear the bands that they want to hear. Download the app and create your own schedule. The festival app is at the App Store. Just punch in Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. You can make your own schedule. You can hear sound samples, files.
I love that.
It's
the
really
sound
cool.
Samples. That is really cool.
Yeah, there's been thousands of downloads of the app, so that's a great way to really keep in touch with what's going on. And there's notifications that we send out if there's any kind of issue, something's delayed a second, which is rare. But, you know, we have a great way to communicate with people who download it, so they know what's happening. And, the pass itself, you can still buy them. Like I say, if you're going to go to, if you do the math, $30 at the door divided by 210, it's seven shows.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to go to more than 7 concerts, buy a pass.
Why not?
Yeah. You know, and some people, after I see them Sunday, they go, "How are you having fun?" He goes, "We already paid for our pass. And it's only Sunday, and they've got a whole week of free
wow,
show."
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it kind of works. But again, you don't have to have a pass to get in. Just same right for a person without a pass as paying cash at the door.
Mm-hmm. How many shows do you see every year, John?
Well, I get to every venue. I have a moped. I don't get
cool.
to sit around and really listen to a whole show, but I definitely stop at all the venues, to the doors, making sure everybody's cool and everybody's on stage and everybody's happy. And in general, it's just been, you know, we're like a Swiss watch now after 15 years. So everybody knows, the artists know that they want to start at 6 and finish at 7 or 6:45 and 7:45. It's a 60-minute set. and then the audience can go to the next show, you know. And you see some people catching a few tunes and there's something else they really don't want to miss, and they'll pop over to another venue. And I would recommend to people, you know, there's everybody cues in on Kilbourne Hall and Max of Eastman Place because it's right in the heart of the festival on Jazz Street. So we started a wristband policy where you can go a couple hours prior to the doors opening, get a wristband, go away, and come back. So you don't just have to stand there in line, because everybody wants to get into Kilbourne. And they're smaller venues, but Harrow, the Xerox, the Christ Church, the Lutheran Church, they're all big venues. Anthology, which has got some really incredible artists there this year. Jacob Collier is starting there on the opening night. And if you haven't heard of Jacob Collier, mind-blowing, unbelievable artist. He's going to be a huge star. But he already is a big star in Europe, not so well-known in the U.S. And he's a solo kid who plays all the instruments.
Wow.
Piano, drums, bass, does loops as a video screen, has some really cool interactive stuff, and he's artistically, harmonically, one of the most advanced musicians I've ever heard.
So if you had one ticket, would he be yours?
Well, I'm going to stop in and listen to a couple of tunes of Jacob, for sure. Mm-hmm. This kid, he's become famous for his YouTube stuff, where you can send a video of yourself singing in your kitchen with your phone, anything. Send it to him. He will harmonize it and send it back to you.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
I mean,
oh, that's
this
so
kid
cool.
is absolutely mind-blowing.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
And you can hear and learn more about him at RochesterJazz.com. Very good. We're going to take our only break of the hour, and when we come back, we'll talk some more jazz, and we'll also have Mike Catone on the line. He's a Rochester native and a trumpeter who will be in town for a few performances. So we'll hear from him, and we'll hear from you. You can join the conversation by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. More jazz, more connections after this short break. I'm Megan Mack. Friday on The Next Connections, the new Wonder Woman movie has sparked a lot of conversation and controversy about feminism in film and how female heroes are portrayed on screen. Maybe you've seen it, maybe you've heard a lot of this talk. Well, we have a lot to talk about, and our panel will share their thoughts on the film and those issues in general. Then in our second hour, cellist Rufus Cappadocia is back in town. We'll hear some music and talk about his activism.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. You are listening to a cover of Royals, which is Lord's Song, and it's being covered by Scott Bradley's Postmodern Jukebox. And if you haven't heard of them or haven't heard them yet, they are so interesting and so cool. They're doing really awesome work. And one of their members is Mike Catone. He's a Rochester native and a trumpeter. He's on the line with us now. He'll be performing at the Jazz Fest this year. Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks. What are you excited about at the Jazz Fest this year, Mike?
Of course, every year. Always excited to come home.
Mm-hmm. And you're performing with Postmodern Jukebox. I just learned about them last night. I wish I had known about them before. But we've got some cuts we can play from them. But when did you first get involved with that group?
It goes back about 5 or 6 years now. Scott Bradley himself was kind of making YouTube videos and doing mashups or covers of pop tunes for a little bit of time before it became Postmodern Jukebox officially. And when I lived in New York City, graduated Juilliard and then was just working around the city, I ended up working at an immersive theater show called Sleep No More. And Scott eventually came and was the MD there, and so I just played trumpet for him, playing standards for a few hours every other night or so at the end of this immersive theater show, and then he started doing these videos at his house, and so he just said, can you come over and play this part? And I think we covered a Selena Gomez tune or something silly like that. It was a Come and Get It, I think is the video. And I can't remember exactly how it spiked, but it spiked really, really fast when Miley Cyrus did that thing at the MTV Music Awards where she had the big foam finger and was dressed highly inappropriately and kind of made a very hilarious appearance on the MTV Music Awards. And so that night, Scott got together an arrangement and did a cover of the tune that she was singing at the award show called We Can't Stop. And he made it like a really classy doo-wop version of the tune. And it overnight, everybody kept looking for Miley Cyrus because they wanted to see that video. And for some reason, his video got kind of plugged in with the search engine. And he got like 8 million views in you know, 24 hours or something like that. And was basically invited to, I think it was Good Morning America, and I remember being in L.A. and not able to get out of a commitment to fly back to New York to play the awards show. So I've kind of been with the band since the beginning of Scott's fame, and it's been an awesome experience. We make videos all the time. It's it's really a priceless experience. And the exposure he's getting through YouTube and the social media world is unrivaled. He's definitely at the forefront of, you know, the ever-changing and evolving music industry. And he's getting a lot of amazing artists, great exposure, and a chance to play good music and live music at that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's when we make those videos, they're all in one cut. No edits, maybe mild sound edits, but it's largely done in one smooth take.
Wow. Mike, I know this isn't your first jazz festival. You were actually the first recipient of the Jazz Fest Scholarship Award. That's correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Mark Iacona and John Nugent gave me a nice push into the music community and helped me get going with my college education. And then I've been in touch with both Mark and John for, what's it been, 16 years now?
We love you, Mikey.
Hey, what's up, John?
Yes, John Nugent's here. He's the artistic director of the Rochester International Jazz Festival, Xerox Rochester International Jazz Fest.
Yep.
And here in studio also, Mike, is Laura Dubin, a pianist who will be performing. And Mike, tell us about your story. You're a Rochester native, just like Laura. Tell us how you got started with your music career.
Okay, I'll try to sum up everything pretty briefly. Grew up in a musical family, a music-appreciating family, not musical. No one played an instrument, but always good recordings around the house. Played piano for a little while, got a trumpet when I was 10. Definitely had no idea that I was going to find a career in music until my band director, Dan McMurray, at Rush Henrietta, kind of gave me a push and said, I think you should try it now rather than later because you might regret it. You have a shot at earning a living in music. So right around the same time, I must have been 16 or 17, this was probably June of the first jazz festival, and I remember staying out way too late at the jam sessions with Nugent and Bob Snyder there over at the Crown Plaza and going to the jam sessions till 2 in the morning and getting up and going to school the next day, basically falling asleep in every class. And that kind of got me real excited about jazz music in general, and my band director passed away my senior year, and he had a heart attack in his sleep, and it was kind of like, man, there's no way I cannot honor his request and advice to try to pursue a career in music. And so, you know, with the help of Clay Jenkins, I got to the Easton School of Music, and obviously I got the jazz scholarship. Howard Potter ran the community music school as well, had a great band. We did essentially Ellington in New York City. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. Easton was life-changing. And then one of the biggest things that really helped with my career was just being around so many amazing players at the jazz festival for those 9-10 days and getting next to people and seeing what it is that I wanted to become. And, you know, some of my idols came through the Easton Theater, all those stages at Max of Easton Place, you know, Kilbourne Hall. It was the jazz festival really has been a springboard for my career, and beyond thankful for that. But went to Easton, got an ed degree, taught a bunch, moved to New York City, went to Juilliard, started working on Broadway, playing small jazz club, where I'm actually playing tonight. That's why I'm in New York City right now. And then never thought I'd leave New York and had some amazing experiences here, but I got asked to move to Los Angeles to join the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz under the direction of Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter. And that was beyond life-changing. I got kind of the pop scene here in L.A. and worked with Bette Midler, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. I just got off the road with Don Henley from the Eagles. And then, of course, in between, sprinkled in between it has been all these postmodern jukebox tours and dates. We just did Radio City Music Hall last year, Microsoft Theater in L.A. And I'll be out with them, obviously, in the Eastman Theater. And, but the band that I work with in L.A. at the Monk Institute is called Holofoner. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically the class that I studied with. We're all alumni, and we stayed together. And, we got a little mini tour this week, and then I'll be in Rochester.
Right, so you have two shows here, correct? Let's talk about those dates.
Actually, I just got to John doesn't know this, but the Wee Trio is playing with Jared Sonig and Eastman alumni Dan Loomis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be covering 3 or 4 tunes from their new album that Nicholas Payton used to play. So I'll be playing with the Wee Trio as well.
Awesome. That's great, Mike. I didn't know that. And I just want to do a little bidding for Mike here because I've heard him play for many years and I've gotten to hang out with him quite a bit. And he's a great friend and we're both car nuts.
Yes,
and
well, as you do that, John, let's listen to a little of his music
sure.
while we do that. This is
hey, car nuts.
When Sunny Gets Blue from, this is a recent album, I think. Great. Mike, there we go. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
Well, he's got one of the.
I'm due for album two.
Mike has a beautiful, pure trumpet sound. He's really developing his own style with great influences. But, you know, it's just a beautiful, warm sound. And, you know, it's like he plays like he is. He's just a great guy. And you can hear that when you hear his sound. It's full, rich, great tone, great depth.
Thanks,
yeah, man.
Listen for a little bit here. This is When Sunny Gets Blue.
I hear a little, you know, Mike, you know what I hear there? Just a wee little tinge of Chet Baker.
Uh-huh.
Some Miles Davis, but Miles Davis is in there too, you know, with a softer edge, but it's Mike Catone, and I could tell right away. Beautiful.
Let's talk dates and times, so if people are hearing you, Mike, now, and where they can find you during the Jazz Fest.
Well, Mike is playing with Holophoner at the new Wilder Room on Sunday the 25th, and then he'll be with the Postmodern Jukebox on Tuesday the 27th. And as I just found out, he's going to play with the Wee Trio on the 29th, also at the Wilder Room. So with Laura at the Wilder Room, Mike at the Wilder Room, the Wee Trio, there's some great music in there, and it's going to be fun. I'm really excited you're coming out for the whole time, Mike.
Oh, I can't wait. And I think I was talking to Mark Iacona, and it looks like you and I, all three of us, are going to have to make our Soul Stew.
Oh, Soul Stew appearance on Jazz Street. Every year, the Toronto-based Soul Stew plays on Jazz Street. It's a free show. And we comprise 3/4 of the horn section we have for the last few years. And we jump up and do a few covers of Stevie Wonder or...
oh, man, it's always a blast.
Yeah, Al Green, or you never know what's going to be played, but all classic soul. And Mike's one of our great trumpet players from Rochester, New York. Yeah.
Yeah, Mike, what's it like to come home after all of your experiences? What's it like to come back to the Jazz Fest?
Man, I was doing a different interview with Wham 13, and I think I said something like it's like a holiday. It's basically you come home for Christmas, you come home for, you know, the New Year if you can, and you know there's Halloween, and then there's Easter, and then there's the Jazz Fest, and the Jazz Fest is just like a 10-day explosion to go home and just see everybody all at once, see your family. And soak up as much music as possible, and you usually leave the other side of it absolutely exhausted because you slept 4 hours and 10 days. But it's totally worth it. I mean, you do everything from try to squeeze in a round of golf in the morning, go set up SJ work for the festival with John and Mark and the production team there, and moved 14 drum kits in one day, and hustle back, try to get an hour of practice in, go see a show, and then go to the Jam Session. I mean, it's absolute exhaustion. But in the best way, doing, you know, exactly what I want to be doing, everything music all day, surrounded by people I love and want to hang out and spend time with. So coming home to the Rochester Jazz Fest, that's my holiday. It's the national holiday for me.
We always say jazz never sleeps, right, Mike?
Exactly.
Beautiful.
Definitely doesn't sleep.
Mike, I know you've got to run. I think you're at rehearsal, so thanks for taking the time
actually,
to talk to us.
Yeah, just finished the rehearsal, so
nice.
We're all good.
We'll see you up here in a few days, Mike.
All right, guys.
Mike Catone, thanks so much.
Yep, you got it.
Laura, you were too polite to tell me that we never talked about when your show is. So while we're talking about the Wilder Room, which is formerly the Rochester Club, where can we catch you at the Jazz Fest?
Well, our show is actually tomorrow night, so it'll be on the first night. It's very exciting. One at 6 o'clock and the next at 10 o'clock. And they're both going to be two completely different programs. And we do that so that if an audience member would like to come to both shows, they can. And they know they're not going to hear the same music twice. Totally different shows.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's so cool about the Jazz Fest. You can hear so many different styles across the whole festival. One thing I want to talk about, John, is pop backstories. That there seem to be a bunch of shows that involve pop backstories and jazz renditions of pop songs, including the Postmodern Jukebox. Rob Braden, let's play the Poker Face cut. This is from Postmodern Jukebox in Mike Catone is playing in this clip. But in addition to them, we're also, we've got a couple names on the list. Some David Bowie-related shows, and let's talk about
Sting.
Those. Sting.
Tierney Sutton is doing the music of Sting. Donnie McCaslin is doing the music of David Bowie. Black Dahlia. I know that there are quite a few bands in here that do classic cover tunes, like the New Breed Brass Band from New Orleans. They're going to do some of the most well-known hits that you'd hear in New Orleans from any brass band. Hot Club of Cowtown will cover a wide range of music. And, you know, I love bands that do original music. That's the focus for what I do. But then you have bands like this, Postmodern Jukebox, who are doing their original take on other music. And that's kind of cool, too. And it's become popular. So, you know, George Wein told me once, and George Wein was the founder of the very first Newport Jazz Festival 61 years ago. And I'm close friends with his producer, Dan Melnick, who runs Saratoga and Newport. And George said to me one time, you know, if it's creative, if it's improvised, you can put it on a jazz festival. And he broke the mold in 1954 by having Chuck Berry and Chubby Checker on the same program as Thelonious Monk and Duke Ellington. Hello. That's quite a disparate, you know,
right.
different style. But the point is, it's America's music. Blues and rock came out of jazz in New Orleans, and Big Spiderbeck and Jelly Roll Morton evolved. So the genealogy of jazz is from New Orleans, and it evolved and took different shapes to where it is today. And, you know, the music is, it's challenged a little bit right now because there's so many styles and takes of jazz, creative improvised music. And I try to put a really nice selection of quality creative improvised music together that will make people feel good. You know, there's nothing here that's going to bring you down at all, as far as I can tell. You know, everything that I've heard, and I've already run this program through my head 20 times, people don't realize the power of this much creativity in a short period of time. It's a good tsunami of music, okay? It just steams through you, and by the time next weekend rolls around, people are elevated. They're levitating, walking around, and then they crash because it's over, and then the letdown and the post-festival, you know, blues because it's gone. But that's what music is. It's there. It's in the present. It's for now, and it makes you feel good. And then, as Chet Baker said, bye-bye, folks. I got to go to another gig, and we go to the next gig, and that's how it is. So that's what great music is all about. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it. Live it, breathe it, and then go to the next one.
That's a beautiful way to say that. I was talking to a friend recently who said, I just don't like jazz, period. I just don't like it. And I got a little frustrated because I don't know if this friend realizes the spectrum that
well,
you just
and
mentioned.
Well, that's just, you know, and I'm not a religious guy, but you kind of forgive those who aren't educated to the reality of what creative improvised music is. I mean, people who see with a little bit of a, you know, the horse blinders on and they can't see to the right or the left, they just see straight ahead, they're kind of missing it. And, I mean, that's okay. I mean, everybody's got their own take on how to live their life and what to listen to and what to enjoy. But if you can do the old, it's not who you know, it's who you don't know idea and get used to that, this is kind of why we have pop shows in the middle of a creative improvised music festival. Is to get those people who aren't necessarily dialed into the creativity and the feeling that great music will give you live and in present than it will from something you hear in the background at a restaurant or in some bar or something like that. And you just get this sense that you don't like it. But it's America's music. I kid a friend of mine, a buddy of mine who I play golf with a lot, he says, I hate jazz. And I said, well, I guess you're not really an American then, are you? And I just kid him like that, and we have so much fun with it. And he gets it now. He knows. Now he's a jazz festival fan.
Hey, okay.
And he'll be at the show tomorrow night for Joss Stone and wandering around with his club pass, having a great time. And it's all good. I mean, everybody can learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's never too late to learn.
Mm-hmm. Laura, what would you say to someone who approached you and said, you know, I really like you as a person, don't know your music well, but I just don't like jazz, so I don't know. What would you say?
You know, that's interesting. I've experienced, you know, the same thing that you've both mentioned, and at first it can be frustrating because it's like, well, it's a little rude to say that to a jazz musician for one thing, but, you know, I try to tell them to have an open mind, what I compare it to sometimes is classical music. Classical music could mean anything from Bach to Beethoven to Schubert to Stravinsky to, you know, any kind of modern classical composer. And there's no way that when you say classical music, it's impossible to encompass every style in one thing. So I kind of compare it to that. Jazz is almost actually more than, I think, 100 years old now. And the music has evolved so much over that time. There's such an amazing history of different styles. Every few years, the music was evolving, different musicians learning from the previous generation and then putting their own spin on it. And that's, of course, still happening today. And now there's, you know, the population is bigger and there's just inevitably more jazz musicians than ever. And everybody's got something different to say, I think. And so it's kind of hard to put a blanket statement and just say that you don't like jazz. I think when a lot of people say that, they either think that all jazz means like elevator music, or I'm not sure. I think that's kind of their perception sometimes. So I try to tell them to have a little more of an open mind, check out a couple different musicians, different styles, different musicians that have different ways of playing, and, you know, listen a little bit more before really saying something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A couple of your comments that are coming in online. Frank called earlier, Frank in Greece. He said he likes to listen to the high school bands on Gibb Street.
That's my favorite part of the jazz festival because, you know what, my son is the bass player in the Harley High School Jazz Band, and his dad is going to sit in and play with him tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 on the Jazz Street stage.
Oh, nice.
So my wife was pregnant with Jess when I started the very first jazz festival. And now the festival is a teenager, and I'm going to get to play with my teenager on Jazz Street tomorrow at 4:30.
So awesome.
Yeah, it's really, that's like I say, it's the pull start to the lawnmower, you know, to get the engine going. When those kids are playing, it's the future of the music, and they play with such, you know, they may not be the most advanced instrumentalists, but there are some really, really good players, and their spirit is so filled with love and happiness and nervousness, and it's really sweet to hear them play. I just love it, and I have to give a shout-out to my good friend Bill Tiberio, who is the Fairport High School band director who helps organize all the high school big bands. Bill Tiberio is a gem. He's one of the most gifted educators in America for music teaching and in high schools, and great sax player who will also be playing at the Little Theater on Friday, June 30th. And Bill, thank you. Look forward to hearing the high school bands all week.
And Laura, again, you were playing in a high school band, and now you're performing with your trio.
Yeah, so I would like to say to any, if there's any high school student listening right now, probably not because you're all in school, but if school's out for any of them and they're listening, just keep doing what you love, keep practicing, and just, you know, go for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nice. Here's a question from Marianne in Rochester. She mm-hmm. says, John, would you consider securing this group for a future festival, Max Raab and the Palast Orchestra from Berlin? I may be pronouncing some of that
the Palast Orchestra, I have heard of them, and it's just a question of the availability and the visa process. And, you know, what people don't realize that my fine assistant, Jane Ford, and I do every international work visa for the artists coming here. We have to go through Homeland Security, file the I-129, work position to work, and deal with our international things. And we're very fortunate the foreign governments are supportive to help travel costs. Otherwise, it'd be financially impossible. But, for instance, Moscow Jazz Orchestra supported. We've had artists from all over Europe come and play here. But we'll definitely take a look if they reach out to me and say they're interested, and we'll see if we can make it happen. You never know.
Very good. And I know there's an act coming back this year by popular demand from South Korea. Let's talk about that.
Oh, Yoon Sun Na.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, she's so beautiful. What a great singer. And she'll be at Harrow East, and I believe her show is on the 29th. This woman has, I don't even know what words to use to describe her. It's just angelic, you know. She's captivating. And she was at the Lutheran Church a few years ago with Ulf Akinius, a guitarist from Sweden. And I believe Ulf may be with her with a band this time. So, you know, if you haven't heard Yoon Sun Na, get over to the Harrow East on the 29th and check her out. She's just absolutely artistically delicious. I don't know how else to say it. She's really great. Really great.
I know this festival has such a strong reputation across the world now. Mm-hmm. Are you getting a lot of calls from promoters from Europe? And
Absolutely.
Tell me how you weed through those.
Well, I go to conferences. Mark and I go to APAP down in New York, and we go to Winter Jazz Fest in New York City. But I go to Vancouver and Victoria every year to meet all the Canadian festival producers. So we block book talent. We talk to the European producers. You know, I produce a lot of tours and events in Scandinavia over the years, and a lot of the Nordic stuff and the Made in the UK series have come about through those connections. And I do have to make one little comment, too. There's a dear, dear friend of mine, John Elson, who helped found the Made in the UK series. We lost him this past September at 63, way too young. He passed away in England, and it's the first year in 16 that he hasn't been here. He ran our big tent, and he also helped curate the Made in the UK series and was a golfing fanatic who I went to Scotland with many, many, many times. Met him in South America. So there'll be some tears shed and a few glasses raised to John Elson. And if anybody's listening in the UK online, all the UK artists that have been here over the years, we owe a debt of gratitude, and they owe a debt of gratitude to John Elson, who helped to spread the British artists all over the world.
Mm-hmm. We're hearing some Joss Stone to close out the hour.
Soul Sessions.
And there's still tickets available
for the
show.
There are a few tickets left, yes. You can certainly pick up, and there was a few just released today in the orchestra by the artist who had held some. So if you're into R&B and you want to hear a great soul singer, she's something else. Drop it to rochesterjazz.com. Click on Joss's photo. Buy your tickets right to your smartphone, print them at home, or pick them up at the box office tomorrow and 8 o'clock show at Eastman Theater.
Nice. Kicking off the start of the festival tomorrow. Mm-hmm. This has been so much fun. Thank you, John.
Oh, it's
John
a pleasure,
Nugent,
Megan. Thank you.
Co-producer and artistic director of the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Laura Dubin, a pianist performing a few times at the festival. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson. Rob Braden's our engineer. Kat Schwartz helping us out on phones today. We'll see you all at the Jazz Fest, and we'll talk to you tomorrow here at WXXI.